Her eyes are wide, totally clueless. She's waiting for me to say something, and the entire class is listening. But I don't have the words, and Branley's glance shifts over my shoulder to someone else. Alex's voice is in my ear. "You should stop now," she says quietly.
"I don't want to,"
I say, eyes still on Branley, who looks concerned. "What did I do?" she asks. And now Jack Fisher is with her, one hand on her elbow. Park immediately joins them, loyal as hell. "Leave it alone, Bran," Jack says, and tries to pull her away, but she's still locked on me. "What did I do to you?"
"You took my boyfriend,"
I say, hating the childishness of the words the second they leave my mouth, the fact that the word boyfriend makes tears come to my eyes. Branley's face changes then, the honest confusion replaced with a smug mask, the one she wears so well.
"No, sweetie," she says. "I didn't take him. He left you."
I swing. It's so simple, I don't understand why I never did it before. My fist is on an arc that will break her perfect nose when it's stopped in midair, my elbow locked with Alex's, her strength so superior to mine that her arm is like a steel pipe, and mine the pipe cleaner.
"Get your shit under control, preacher's kid,"
Park says, and I lunge at him before the last syllable is out of his mouth. Alex spins me into the wall, the knuckles of her fist in my spine, pinning me in place like a butterfly.
"You need to calm down, Claire."
It's the same voice she uses on the cats at the shelter, the one that makes them melt a little bit. I kind of get their reaction, because I understand that if I'm unable to do it on my own, she will make me. I take a shaky breath.
"Okay," I say. "Okay."
Alex relaxes her grip, and I turn to see Branley nestled behind Jack, her boobs pushed up against his back. Sarah rustles around in the corner and picks up Branley's lipstick. "Here," she says, handing it over, as if restoring it makes everything better. Branley takes it as Miss Hendricks walks into the room, the bustle of the hall dying behind her.
"What's going on?"
she asks, eyes narrowing at the sight of the tears that finally spill over onto my cheeks.
"PK lost her shit," Park says.
"Parker Castle," she screeches at him, but he only shrugs. She narrows in on me. "What happened?"
"Nothing. It's fine," Branley says suddenly. "Don't worry about it."
"I'm the one who decides what's worth worrying about," Miss Hendricks snaps back, but Branley walks away, leaning into Jack more than necessary. My breaths are coming deep and heavy now, the tears running down my cheeks freely. Sarah has one hand on my shoulder, and Alex stands on my other side in what feels like support, but I'm pretty sure she'd gladly faceplant me right into the tiles if I flipped again.
"I think I need to go to the guidance office," I say.
Hendricks nods. "One of you go with her."
"I will,"
Alex volunteers, and I swear there's the tiniest bit of relief on Sarah's face when she does. We're halfway to Miss Reynolds' office before I get my breath to stop hitching in my chest, and it occurs to me to wipe my face.
"Bathroom,"
I say, ducking in because a cold sink and some running water sounds a hell of a lot more comforting than trying to decipher what kind of judgment Miss Reynolds's eyebrows are delivering. Alex leans against the wall, eyeing me in the mirror while I splash my face. A flush of embarrassment rises up my neck and into my cheeks, underscoring the hot tear tracks.
"I'm sorry,"
I say.
"Why?"
I watch the water sweeping away the salt on my face, the drops collecting on my chin as I lean my forehead against the mirror.
"Because that's not me,"
I say, closing my eyes.
"I don't hit people. That's not who I am."
And Alex's voice in the darkness.
"Wrong. That's exactly who you were in that specific moment. That was Claire at her most basic, unaltered by expectations."
I open my eyes, the blue of my irises so much more intense now that I've been crying.
"But you stopped me."
Venting your primal self in an emotional moment can be more than your socially constructed self can handle after the fact, Alex says, her eyes gliding over me. Look at you. Your hands are shaking, your voice is weak, and your conscience is reasserting itself. I heave a sigh and pull back from the mirror, my forehead leaving a smear behind.
Yeah, I admit. It totally is.
All I did was smack Branley's hand a little, dent her makeup, and give her a lesson on what her new lipstick tastes like. And I feel like shit. I turn to face Alex, resting my back against the sink.
Thanks for stopping me.
Of course, she says, as if restraining people is part of her routine. Her eyebrows come together as she scrutinizes the wall above my shoulder. Is Marilee Nolan a bitch? She asks.
What?
Alex nods at the wall behind me. Right there. It says, Marilee Nolan is a bitch. Is she?
No, I don't know. Not really, I don't think so, I say.
But whoever wrote that had a red Sharpie and a lot of conviction. We should erase it, Alex says.
That's permanent marker.
Nothing is permanent. Alex pumps the towel dispenser half a dozen times, and I find myself playing janitor with her, our knuckles scraping against the cinder block wall as we wet fistful after fistful of cheap towels. I stopped you because it's easier to fantasize about violence than actually perform it, she says a few minutes later. Most people consider things they wouldn't do in real life. And there's enough visceral satisfaction in the thought to alleviate the emotion. In reality, hurting another person on purpose is not a simple task, and not everyone is up to it. I remember how I wanted to find the guy who threw out the sack of puppies and kick him bloody. How many times I've considered punching Branley in the face. But when I actually tried it, it all went the wrong way, like a carefully scripted scene I imagined ahead of time falling apart because nobody else knew their lines. Of all the times I imagined smashing her nose until it bled and shredding her pouty lips on her perfect white teeth, I never factored in that look of complete incomprehension on her face when I did it. Now that I can't unsee it, the absolute innocence in her eyes when I was bent on hurting her is its own revenge, and I feel gut-punched, even though Branley never raised a finger. It's not restricted to violence, Alex continues, still scrubbing at the wall. People fantasize about sex with someone they can't attain, or what they would do with the money if they won the lottery. It's wish fulfillment, a break from reality.
A way to escape, I say, thinking about my dad's words the other day.
Alex nods. Until it becomes your new prison, and you either live in the daydream or make it a reality. And in your case, that would mean going against who you actually are inside. A good person. I toss my last handful of paper towel, now stained pink, into the trash and get myself a fresh one from the dispenser. I wet it and press it against my still hot face. She's right. My new friend with a good vocabulary knows me better than I know myself.
We should go to the office, I say. Talk to Miss Reynolds.
Alex follows me into the hallway and we walk the rest of the way in our special kind of silence. The one that doesn't need to be broken for us to be comfortable. I get into the guidance office just as Reynolds is hanging up her phone, probably getting a call from Hendrick saying I'm on my way. I don't know why I'm here. I don't need her anymore. Alex made the bathroom more productive than the guidance office, more honest than my father's confessional. But I say the right words, tell the truth like I'm supposed to, and promise to apologize to Branley, who is reportedly being very mature about the entire thing. When I'm done, I find Alex waiting for me in the hallway. She's pressed against the wall underneath the sign for the girls' bathroom that someone drew on, an erect penis with eyes glaring up her plastic skirt. I didn't expect Alex to be there. I am the preacher's kid. My friends are on the debate team and quiz bowl. My friends are in marching band. My friends are in class right now because that's where they're supposed to be. Except Alex isn't. And I'm pretty damn sure that she's my friend.
Chapter 20. Jack. It's definitely a girl fight day. First, PK went after Branley. Now Alex and Branley are vying for space in my head. It's a good thing I have a job where your mind can be elsewhere. In fact, it's better that way. Because I kill things for a living. It's raining. The holding pens smell like wet shit and anxiety. The living cows might not know what the coppery tinge to the air is, but they do know it's nothing good. Another one comes down the chute toward me, and I put my bolt gun right on its fuzzy forehead, the spot a kid would kiss if this were a stuffed animal being tucked in at night. I pull the trigger, and it drops, 1,500 pounds of unconscious steaks and hamburger hitting the ground with a meaty thump. I hook a chain around a back leg, and this one is hoisted away from me, tongue lolling. Depending on which line it goes down, it might see my dad in a few moments, pupils reflecting his face right before he slits its throat and the brightness fades. He did that job before the animal rights groups said they had to stun them first. He says the pigs would scream like women while they hung, and you had to spin them to get their throat pointed at you right. He wore earplugs then. Now he wears earbuds, says the screaming was almost better because he didn't hear the skin tearing, the blood dripping onto the concrete. I know for a fact that his playlist is straight classical music. He just stands there all day, a huge guy with a blood-spattered beard wearing a rubber apron, holding a knife, pumping Bach into his ears so he can go somewhere else in his head. Nicest guy you'll ever meet. Dad got me this job when I turned 18. Told me this was the best way to earn money for college and appreciate it at the same time. And I sure as hell do, because there's another cow already coming down the chute, looking at me with big, confused eyes that won't close, not even when I pull the trigger. I don't know how my dad has done this for so many years, but I know why, so that I don't have to. I love the shit out of him and have grown too old to say it. So when he pulled some strings to get me a shift after school that would overlap with his for 1 hour, I said yes. Yes, because even that little bit of money will help get me through college. Yes, because when he asked, he expected me to say no. Yes, because I don't think I'm better than him, not by a long shot. Yes, because when he's leaving, he walks past me and claps me on the shoulder without speaking. Yes, because my dad is a good guy, and I want to be one, too. So I shoot the next cow and try to let the impact noise jolt Alex and Branley out of my head, but they won't go. They're stuck there, revolving around each other while I try to sort out what's what. When Branley faced down PK, I was right next to her because that's where I've always been. In fifth grade, it was me and Park across from Jimmy Owens when he knocked her into the gravel on the playground because she wouldn't lift up her skirt and show him her panties. She's got tiny white scars on her knees from that, places the gravel dug deep and turned her skin to ground meat. I look at them sometimes, and I could still hear her crying. But I remember a time before that, when she didn't wear skirts, before she realized that she was cute as hell and it could go a long way. I remember hunting for crawdads with Branley, wearing jeans rolled up to her skinny knees, mud smeared on her cheeks, sweat making her hair dark. I remember when Branley was my best friend, and we didn't understand why people smiled at us when we held hands. And now my hands have been everywhere on her, and she doesn't dish out a smile unless she wants something. God damn it, I say to a new cow before I shoot her. I don't even know Alex, I remind myself. There's no reason why I'm so fascinated by her, but I just am. I can't get her out of my head. All my memories of Branley can't compete against a few minutes of conversation with Alex. Awkward and stilted, both of us weighing every word like we're testing out a new language on each other. And we kind of are, I guess. We use the same consonant and vowel sounds, but have never said them to each other before. And somehow, that makes them all new again. I've been with enough girls to know that one body is as good as another when the lights go out. Discovering women is far from a new thing to me, but the outline of Alex's taut arm when she held back PK was like a damn aphrodisiac. I want to know about her. I want to know what she looks like with tousled hair. I want to know what the scar on her wrist is from. I understand now why my mom always asks me if I'm interested in any girls as opposed to if I like them. I like Branley. I've always liked Branley. I'm interested in Alex. She's buried in my head so deep, I'm still thinking about her as I drive home. And when my headlights bounce off the same ditched car I saw yesterday, I hit the brakes. It's pitch black, but I see enough to know it's her car, and that it hasn't budged an inch. I take the curve slow, thumbs drumming on the steering wheel in thought. Alex hadn't offered me her number, and I was so focused on keeping a conversation going, I didn't think to ask. Driving to her house to tell her the car is still in the ditch seems pretty pointless, since I bet she already knows. What I'd also bet is she has no idea how to get it out and isn't the type to ask for help. I call for Dad the second I walk in the back door, kicking off my blood-slicked boots to sit next to his in the mudroom. "In here," my mom calls from the living room. They both look so comfortable, I hate to ask. Mom's curled up on the couch with a book. Dad's hair is still wet from a shower, and he's got his recliner up, a football game on the TV. "Hey, Dad, can I get a favor?" "What's that?" he asks, eyes flicking from the screen to me. "Friend of mine went in the ditch, and her car's still there." "Oh, her car," my mom says, over the sound of Dad's ancient recliner squealing in protest as he flips it down. "How bad?" Dad asks. "Barely in the ditch, right on the north side of the curve." "Are you interested in this girl, honey?" Mom asks, eyeing me over the pages of her book. I take a deep breath instead of waving her off like I usually do. "Yes, I'm definitely interested." Mom raises her eyebrows at Dad. "I guess you better get going then." It's the work of one truck, one chain, 5 minutes, and then I'm in Alex's car with Dad following me. I drive it to her place while trying to formulate the perfect thing to say when she answers the door. Except her mom does. She's all poise and coolness, a drink in her hand and a question on her face when she looks at me. She's like something out of a magazine with drawn-on eyebrows, one of them arcing a little more severely than necessary as I continue to say nothing. "Hi," I finally manage. Is Alex home?" She looks confused for a split second, and I wonder if I somehow drove to the wrong house in the dark. "Mom?" Alex's voice calls from somewhere inside. "Was that the door?" "Yes," her mom says cautiously, still eyeing me. "It's for you." And then Alex is there, standing beside her in the doorway. They're shoulder to shoulder and staring at me as I stand awkwardly on a welcome mat with very little wear and tear. I remember the shriek of the hinges when the front door was opened, sticking for a moment in the frame so that it had to be yanked. The long pause inside a dead house right after I rang the doorbell. No one comes here. Alex shakes off her bewilderment first. "Hello, Jack." Not hi, hey, what's up. She says hello. And she says my name to me, which is something people don't usually do in conversation. It feels so intimate, I nearly blush. Her mom goes into motion, like a robot that just now went into startup. "Yes, hello. Are you going to introduce us, Alex?" "Mom, this is my friend, Jack Fisher." Alex says it automatically as prompted. The word friend comes out awkwardly, one her tongue and lips haven't practiced enough. I'm thinking about her tongue and lips when I should be shaking the hand her mom is holding out, waiting patiently for me to divert my attention from Alex's mouth. Her hand, limp in mine, a greeting as warm as the wind biting my back. "I got your car out of the ditch," I say, eyes back on Alex so quickly it's like she's a magnet. Her glance goes over my shoulder to the driveway where my dad sits in the truck, lights dim, engine idling. "I was going to call, but I don't have your number," I add, hoping the hint is enough. Her mom has faded away, a pale figure receding back into the house. "I don't have a phone," Alex says. "Maybe you should get one." Her eyes are on mine, and it's like there's no such thing as casual flirting with this girl. Every word she speaks is intense as hell and thoroughly investigated before she lets it out of her mouth. "Maybe I should," she says. And I kind of feel like I just won the world.
Chapter 21. Alex. You learn how to pretend when you live in this house. We're both so good at it now, we don't know how to do anything else. Pretend that I'm okay. Pretend the scotch bottle is as full as it was yesterday. Pretend that Anna's permanently closed door might open again. Pretend that mine doesn't exist. Pretend other families live like this. It's the only thing we do well together. It wasn't always this way. I remember my father. I remember marking the calendar, putting smiley face stickers on the day when he would get home from his run. I remember Mom's mood changing as we got closer to it, her face reflecting the sticker. Dad would come home. The rumble of a semi in the night and the flash of lights trailing across my bedroom walls, slipping downstairs in my footed pajamas, unable to mask the swish-swish noise of them as I came down the stairs, Anna behind me. We never got in trouble, no matter how late it was. He'd scoop us up and hug us, toss us in the air so high Mom would squeal a bit. The house would smell like gas and takeout, and nobody cared. Then things changed. Mom seemed to prefer the days in between the smiley faces on the calendar, her face stretching into a tight mask as we got closer to the next one, the muscles creating the best parody of it that they were able. We were bigger and harder to toss in the air, and Dad just kind of looked at us when we ran to him, unsure what to do with something not shaped like a steering wheel. So, we stopped running to him. And then a sticker day came, and he didn't. It faded, the color creeping back from the edges, until only the teeth were yellowed. Mom never took the calendar down. It hung on the refrigerator, a silent testament to his failure, a constant reminder whenever we wanted a drink. It was her litany when Anna was still alive, her echoed refrain any time my sister pointed out tangles in my hair or toenails grown too long. "At least I'm here," she would say, stomping away from the argument so that her footfalls shook the house, asserting the simple fact of her presence. Every day that passed brought my real face out from under the baby fat, the elongating cheekbones too much like his, the eyes reminding her of another pair that couldn't bear to look at her anymore. Dad's things are still here. His clothes hang limply in his closet, his tools unused in the garage. The only thing of his not covered with dust is a punching bag, because I've kept it in perpetual motion since he left. The rage my small fists vented growing into an actual threat now that I'm older. When I'm throwing punches is the only time I remember him clearly. All the hours I stood nearby, my own face crunched in fierceness like his, my feet mimicking his movements. I went out there alone only once, after Mom had tossed something I was reading into the garbage disposal, after I ignored her instructions to clean my room. Pages had flown in the air, shredded words floated between us, and I wanted to cross the distance with my knuckles, wipe the smirk off my mother's face. But I knew better, and I ran to the garage to do all the things I wanted to do to her, to the punching bag instead. Screaming, punching, slapping, kicking, sweating, crying, heaving. I was red-faced and out of air when Dad found me resting on the tailgate of his truck, one sleeve of my shirt dried stiff from wiping tears. He sat next to me, his weight pushing the truck bed down, my little feet that much closer to the ground. He rested his hand on my head and sighed, and I saw that he was crying too. I didn't understand then, but I do now. Anna never forgave him for leaving, for the absence that the checks, bigger every month once he owned his company, didn't fill. But I know it was the better alternative, just like I know why he cried that day he found me in the garage. There are parts of yourself that you hate, parts that you know other people wouldn't understand. And he knew his own worst elements had been passed on to me, this unwieldy wrath that burns through my brain, turning reason into ash. So I can't be angry with him for leaving when I understand too well the reason. If he'd stayed, he would have killed our mother eventually. Maybe when we were kids, maybe when we were older, maybe once we had left. But either way, it was a foregone conclusion. We could either have a mother and money coming in, or we could have a cold grave and a father in jail. And while I know he made the right decision for Anna, I don't know about me. I want to tell him all these things that I've done. Whether he would be disgusted or proud, I do not know. But at least I would have someone to tell, someone who knows me. It's the deepest part of who I am, a fundamental part of myself that has been shared with no one, the essence of who I am, the core of understanding me. And I'm the only one who knows. If Mom has guessed, she is neither proud nor disgusted. With Anna gone, we listen for footfalls, each of us avoiding the other with an intense concentration. Occasionally, we cross paths by accident, our bubbles of personal space like a Venn diagram, becoming darker where they overlap. Dad left. Anna is gone. I have never been here.
Chapter 22. PK. When Alex walks into the church with me, it gets still so fast it's like there's been a trachea rapture. This is not a quiet kind of church, so the little bubble of silence that surrounds us gains notice as it expands. It turns heads, exposing faces that still at the sight of Alex Kraft, here, in the old church in the woods. I hadn't even thought about it when I brought her with me. Alex is within shouting distance of her sister's last resting place. All of them. Alex isn't Anna's little sister to me anymore. She's Alex, my friend. So when she came over and I told her we were going to a party, it never occurred to me that I was also dragging her back to the woods where her sister died. Sarah shoves a beer into my hand, the cold glass clinking against one of my rings. "Good to see you in church, preacher's kid," she says, her breath sugar-laced, lips tinged red with her own drink. "Cheers," I say, clinking my bottle against hers. I step over a piece of the roof that has collapsed since the last party. The conversation starts up again, the anomaly of Alex's presence fading fast while everyone chases their own goals for the night, whether it's at the bottom of a bottle or in someone else's pants. Alex follows me, her eyes combing the crowd of our classmates as I do the same. It's already dark, but someone was thinking ahead tonight. Everyone has to raise their voices to be heard over the hum of a generator, loud and persistent, lighting the strings of lights thrown against the walls and feeding the space heaters. There are fires, too, made in the places where the stone floor has been torn up, exposing the black earth underneath. The whole place smells like fire and ash, sweat and vomit, rain and rot. We love it. I bet our parents loved it, too, when they were our age. Once, some of us made a game of trying to find them in the graffiti, names and dates mixed in an obscene smear, a town history more colorful and honest than the stories on paper. I found my mom, her name paired with Park's father, and then I stopped looking. I knew my dad didn't write on the walls of any church, collapsed and broken or not, but I don't doubt that he came here. Sometimes, after I've had a few beers, I think about their parents, our grandparents, and then back further, to people who loved this place for a different reason. People who pulled rocks out of the ground to make the walls, cutting timber for a roof that has now rotted mostly away. The supports still in place are stained black from ashes of the generations that followed, our hands hard at work to tear it back down. There are only 5 pews left, the rest cut up for fire over the years. Those that remain are high-value real estate, the only place to sit before you find somebody to sneak into the woods with. Branley has set up court at one, her eyes already artificially bright, her voice loud and brassy while Adam sprawls next to her,
one arm thrown possessively around her shoulders. I flinch at the sight and look away to find Jack Fisher coming toward us, a beer in each hand, happier to see me than he's ever been in his life. But he walks right past me, gives a bottle to Alex and takes her other hand, leading her over to a pile of rubble where the less fortunate sit once the real seats are taken. I take another swig of my beer and my eyes slide back over to Adam. He's looking at me. I jerk away, following Alex and Jack. I perch next to her on a rock, trying to find a spot to put my ass so that I'm not in pain. I bought a phone, Alex says to Jack. Her words come out smoothly, her voice more accustomed to use from hours of us talking at the shelter, sentences shared over dog shampoos, punctuated by the snip of the nail clipper. Here's my number, she adds, with a note of confidence that she wouldn't learn even in years of conversation with me. Jack snatches the piece of paper she hands him like he's afraid it'll evaporate, punching the numbers in. He raises his phone to snap a pic of her, then puts it back down, cautious. Is it okay if I take your picture? She smiles hesitantly, but her arm goes around my shoulders, barely resting on my skin. I lean in, surprised at the contact, and what's left of my beer sloshes onto my pants. Shit, I say, just as Jack takes the pic. Oh, nice, he says, laughing a little as he turns the screen toward us. I'm staring at my lap, my lips pursed right on the "eh" in shit, mild annoyance stamped on my features like my own crotch offended me somehow. Alex's arm dangles awkwardly near my neck, as if she's not quite sure how to touch someone. She's not smiling, just looking into the camera with the dead stare that makes feral cats reconsider their choices. God, I mutter, redo. Jack shakes his head. It's perfect. He stands to put his phone in his back pocket and leans toward both of us, his breath heavy with beer in a way that makes me feel relaxed instead of repulsed. Park and I tried to chase off a couple of tweakers when we brought in the generator, he says, head jerking toward a dark corner where there's a circle of guys I don't know. Just be aware of them. I am, Alex said. They're older than us, their features vaguely familiar, like they're either somebody's brothers or graduated when we were still puckering our faces at the taste of alcohol. One of them is good-looking in a grungy way, lanky blonde hair back in a ponytail, dark circles under his eyes that could be makeup, could be something else. The gauge in one of his ears is connected to his nose ring with a chain. He catches me looking and tips me a wink. I glance back down at my bottle. I'm empty. Here. Alex switches out our bottles, hers heavy and cold, mine light and warm from my grip. I'll get you another one, Jack says. No, she says simply, eyes still on the tweakers. I'll get rid of the empty then, he says, but she shakes her head. No. I'll go get myself another one, come up with a different line of conversation, then come back and sit next to you, he says, leaning toward her a little too much, taking up more of her personal space than she usually allows. But she's smiling when she says, I would like that. He brings out the million-watt smile that's separated more than a few asses in this room from their panties, but it looks genuine and sweet, like a little kid who found out he's getting exactly what he wanted for Christmas. Okay, be right back, he says. Don't move. Alex flaps her arms maniacally in response, and he busts out laughing, the sound carrying as he heads to the altar, where there's a collection of coolers and a keg. Hey, friend, I say, nudging her knee with mine. Part of this whole friendship gig is that you tell me when you like a guy. Her mouth curls a little bit in a half smile. Oh, really? Yeah, it's totally a thing, I say, slinging back what turns out is, somehow, the last swallow of the beer Alex gave me. I need another. So who do you like, friend? She asks, ignoring my request. Adam, I say automatically, followed by, fuck. Why? I look at the collection of glass scattered near the bases of the walls, some remnants of long-broken stained glass windows, most the dull browns and greens of accumulated beer bottles. Even the sharp edges are deceptively beautiful in the flickering firelight and the weak glow of the naked bulbs hooked to the generator. This sea of colors is punctuated by flattened shotgun shells from the hunters who hole up here during deer season, and I spot, for the first time, empty hypodermic needles among them. I don't know, I finally answer, bringing my bottle back to my lips even though there's nothing in it. Force of habit, maybe. Alex takes the empty from me, carefully balancing it on a slanted rock between my knees. Remind me, she says. Which one is he? I sigh and rub my eyes. In the past few weeks, I've grown accustomed to Alex's ignorance of the names of the people we've grown up with, so now that I'm forcing her out into society, she's getting a crash course. But right now my brain is slowing down, my tongue growing heavy. Jack hasn't made it back from the keg yet, his t-shirt snagged on Branley's fingernails, sharp as blackberry thorns. She's left Adam behind, and we look at each other across the sputtering fires, his features smeared in the heat shimmer. And I don't have the words to identify him anymore. If he's not my boyfriend, then I don't know how to differentiate him from the others. He's there, I say, pointing at him. Oh, him, she says, clearly unimpressed. I don't understand. She squints at Adam, as if somehow my attraction will make more sense if he's viewed through a fuzzy lens. And I don't even know if I'm into him anymore, so it's not like I can rant about how hot he is or how his eyes make me melt. Because they did back in seventh grade, but that was a hell of a long time ago. I've gotten so used to thinking of Adam as my boyfriend that his name and face kick in good memories, and I'm salivating like one of Pavlov's dogs even when there's no food on the way. So, maybe that's all I want anymore, the memories and not actually Adam. The explanation makes sense in my head, but I'm a few drinks deep, and I don't trust my mouth to make sense of it. Alex watches Adam watching Branley, who watches Jack, who only has eyes for Alex, and I think if there were lines connecting us all, it would be a tangled mess. Jack disengages from Branley, who sulks back to Adam like he's the consolation prize. A couple of sophomores try to escape into the privacy of the woods without anyone noticing, but the tweakers call them out on it. Hey, man, the shortest one yells. Don't let Comstock get her. Long as you get her first, the blonde says, sticking his fist out for a bump, which the sophomore returns even though the girl gives him a dirty glare. They slide into the shadows, but not before she shoots a furtive glance at Alex, wondering if she heard.
Sorry about that,
Jack says quietly as he joins us, and I don't know if he's talking about the fact that it took him so long to get back, or that someone casually dropped the name of Anna's killer as if he were nothing more than an urban legend. Nothing more than a scary bedtime story to keep girls out of the woods, their pants above their ankles. He may just be a cheaply bandied about name now, a capitalized word that makes us shift uncomfortably and drop our voices, but he was a real person only a few years ago. A real person who kept duct tape and a hammer in the trunk of his car, waiting for the right moment. A real person who spread legs and spilled blood. That blood flows in the veins of the person whose knee is touching mine, and as I finish off the bottle Jack brought me, I wonder if she can smell the blood-saturated dirt or hear her sister's scream still echoing off the trees. That's when I realize exactly how drunk I am. Lately, I can't eat much. My throat doesn't want to do anything other than say Adam's name, and my stomach only wishes to digest him. I might as well have popped an IV in my arm and hooked up to the keg as soon as I got here. There's no food in my stomach, and the alcohol is passing straight through its lining into my blood, soaring through my body to infect my brain, my heart, my organs. Everyone around me is talking, but my mouth doesn't want to participate by doing anything other than wrapping itself around a beer bottle. I want to ask Jack if he'll get me another one, but he's entirely lost in Alex, his eyes drinking her up like she's the keg and he's an alcoholic. I know I'm going to have to concentrate in order to stand up, and I take a moment to identify the best way to do it, which foot to move first, and what rocks to brace my hands against in order to get vertical. I make it happen, and I'm on a path for the keg when Branley beats me to it, shoulders bare even though it's nearly snowing. She's coated in a sheen of sweat from sitting so close to the fire, her blonde curls losing some of their bounce. One of the guys who has taken up a post at the altar tells her she looks like she needs to cool off and sprays her down with beer. She shrieks, her white tank top plastered to her chest. Beer is dripping off her and she stamps her foot, sending everything that will shake into a jiggle.
"Holy shit, dude," one of the guys says, staring. "That was not cool."
"Yeah, not cool, man," another agrees. But they all might as well have their hands down their pants.
"Adam!"
Branley yells, and he's on his feet to come to her rescue, her jacket in his hand. I change my course, in no hurry to be near a wet, pissed-off, nearly naked Branley and my loyal, to her anyway, ex-boyfriend. I've got an empty bottle in my hand and no one to give it to. Despite the fact that a bum could come out to the church and make a fortune in recycling, I've never had the nerve to just throw mine in a corner. I drove around with bottles rolling in my back seat for a week once because I couldn't bear to litter. Sarah's deep in conversation with some of the other basketball players, something about how the ref lost them their last game. Everyone has settled down into groups for the night, people cuddled around fires they made, or curling up with each other in sleeping bags. I can't even go out into the woods for fresh air and privacy because there are more people out there than in here by now, and they don't want company. Somebody is taking the bottle from me, and I just stare at his hand for a second. Big knuckles with drying skin, a broad silver band on the middle finger.
"Need a fresh?"
he says, and my eyes slowly find their way to his face. It's the blonde tweaker. The chain on his face accents his sharp nose, the hollows of his eyes dark in the flickering firelight. This close, his skin has the unmistakable rough quality of a long-time user, pocked yet oddly clear. But his eyes are arrestingly blue, and as I look into them, recognition dawns. "You're Ray Parsons," I say. "We were in study hall together my freshman year, third period cafeteria." He smiles, the chain resting lightly on his cheek when he does.
"Oh, yeah?"
"Yeah," I go on. The details coming out with such clarity, it's obvious I kind of had a thing for him then. "You sat at the corner table." "I'm PK. I sat over by the water fountain. You were a senior. You didn't notice me."
"I'm noticing you now, PK,"
he says, dragging his eyes over my body and not even trying to hide it. I know I look good tonight. I'm not Branley, and I never will be. I'm not even Sarah, with her athletic build, or Alex, with her green eyes and freckles. But I am small and cute, with a decent rack that I know how to accentuate. I put on a push-up bra tonight, opened my top two buttons, and zipped my down coat right up to the bottom of my cleavage. My tits couldn't be more on display. And Ray Parsons is definitely window shopping. I feel a little rush in my stomach. A wave of motion that pushes my heart into my throat and makes my pulse skip. I haven't felt that for anyone but Adam in a long time. Ray Parsons had my attention when I was a freshman. Basketball player, casual smoker, and the guy most likely to pull the fire alarm. He had an edge to him then that might have sliced some of the softer bits away in the past few years. But he's still Ray Parsons, and I'm so very alone right now that I don't argue when he hooks a finger through my belt loop and takes me over to his friends.
"Guys, this is PK," he says.
They all give me an up nod, and one asks what the hell kind of name is that. "Nickname for preacher's kid," I answer, as Ray throws my bottle over his shoulder and heads to the altar.
"Oh, yeah?"
They're suddenly more interested, eyes going over me like Ray's did, now that he's not here anymore.
"You a virgin?" one of them asks. "Really?" another says. "You gonna ask her that?"
"Yep," I say, not caring. There's a plastic cup in my hand now, and Ray's finger is back in my belt loop, his thumb rubbing up under my coat to press against skin.
"Hey, Ray," one of his friends says, pointing two fingers at me like pistols. Virgin. His eyes do their pass again as he says, nice. I don't like his friends, but I'm still more than a little captivated by the image of Ray Parsons, a guy who never glanced at me 3 years ago, now unable to look away. I lean against him as I drink, not caring that the present version of Ray has slightly greasy hair and an obvious drug problem. I'll make him take a bath, clean him up in all the ways, and finally get the prize I wanted as a freshman. I always thought you were cute, I try to say, but my words are tripping over one another, endings running into beginnings and middles being left out completely. My knees give out, but I don't go down. Ray's got me pressed against him so that I don't fall, his blue eyes no longer on me, but scanning the crowd as he edges us into the shadows. A hand is on my spine, pushing down into my pants and past my panties, fingers twisting in search. I know it's not Ray because he's practically carrying me now. There's a voice in my ear that says, "Come on, preacher's kid. We'll take you to church for real." They've almost got me out into the darkness, and a nearby fire pops, bringing a brief flash of light as my eyes slide shut. I see a cartilage stud in Ray's ear as my head falls forward onto his shoulder. And then, I'm gone.
Chapter 23, Jack. I'm going to catch hell from Park, but I haven't been able to stay away from Alex all night. He's doing what he does best, playing the room, making every girl there feel like she's the one he's thinking about, even if he is talking to somebody else. But I can't even pretend. Yeah, I still notice stuff. I've always thought of PK as someone I could borrow decent class notes from, but tonight she's sporting a pair she might have bought from Victoria's Secret, but she's wearing them like they grew on her. So it's not like I've gone blind or anything. I just don't care. I don't care about any of the other girls because Alex accepts a beer from me, even if she doesn't drink it. I don't care because when I take her hand, she lets me, and we're sitting next to each other on the rubble pile. I'd rather be there than on a pew with Branley or in a sleeping bag with anyone else. I'm halfway toward being drunk and swimming in her when I go to get PK another beer, partially to be a gentleman, but also because Branley has taken it upon herself to transfer all her body heat to Adam. Even though she can't be retaining much, put on some clothes, Branley, it's November. And I know that can't be easy for PK. Branley looks perfect, as usual. I've never seen the shirt she's wearing, so it's probably new, and I doubt it's got two tiny holes in it like all mine do because I buy everything at the thrift store where they staple the price tags on. Her family can afford real new clothes. Not new to me, but it belonged to someone else 2 weeks ago. I pull two beers from my cooler, and I'm headed back from the altar when Branley snags me, her fingernails digging past T-shirt and down into skin. "Shit, Bran," I say, stumbling back. I bump the altar, but it doesn't even shiver. Dad says that thing is the most solid-built piece of furniture in the whole county, which is a good thing because I bet more than a few of us here tonight were conceived on it. Seriously? Branley is up in my face, my spine braced against solid oak. Seriously? Going to need more to go on than that, I tell her, but I'm not stupid. Alex Kraft, she says, practically spitting the name. I thought maybe it was that Alex cheerleader from Twin Rivers, or God, maybe even a dude, but Alex Kraft? Seriously? So, it's more realistic to you that I would want to bang a guy than her? I say, trying to make it sound like a joke, trying to ignore the burst of anger in my gut. I don't like the way Alex's name sounds in Branley's mouth, like a poison. I try to shove past her, but her claws are in me, and I'm not going anywhere until she's finished. It doesn't make sense, Branley insists. I mean, look at her. And I do. She's so normal, perched on the crumbling pile of stone. Not like a girl in a magazine or even Branley, so impossibly gorgeous she would never ever be crawling around in rubble. Alex has a smudge of dirt across her cheekbone that only accentuates the paleness of the skin under her freckles. She's picking at the label on her empty beer bottle, and I love the fact that she couldn't give less of a shit about her fingernails. I am looking at her, Branley, I say. I can't not look at her. Whatever, she mutters, releasing me in a huff. I leave her behind me without a second thought, perfectly aware that any number of guys there will be happy to reinflate her ego. Jack! My name stretched into as many syllables as possible. Park is done making his rounds. So happy to see me, it's like he forgot we were just talking 20 minutes ago. He sails toward me, arms spread wide, when he sees Alex and hits the brakes so hard that shards of glass spit out from under his shoes. His face goes blank, and for the first time in my life, I'm seeing Park at a loss for words. Hello, Alex says. His grin is plastered back on. Hello, he says, his tone almost mocking her, but not quite. He bows low. Please do not crush my balls, madam. Don't touch me without my permission, and I won't. Okay, cool. He joins us on the pile, taking the spot PK vacated a few minutes ago. His eyes move in between the two of us. So is this, like, going to be a thing now? Yes, I say. In that case, you need to be my friend, he says to Alex. Jack and I are a package deal, so you're my friend now, okay? Alex looks him up and down, taking her time before she answers. Yes. Sweet. He holds out his fist for a bump. No hard feelings? Is that even possible? She asks, her mouth going up in a teasing smile I haven't seen before, her gaze directed at his crotch. Park howls with laughter, clapping a hand down on Alex's shoulder to keep from rolling off the rocks. It took a while, if you really want to know. I was out of commission, and there was much weeping. All the girls you see here were devastated. Back in business now, though, he adds, tipping her a wink as he finishes off a beer. He suddenly seems to realize he's had his hand on her, and he lets go quickly. Sorry, he says. And sorry about those asshole tweakers saying come, you know, saying his name like it was no big deal, a joke or something. She nods, accepting the apology. His name means nothing to me. Really? Branley's friend Lila pokes her head out from her sleeping bag, her short blonde hair sticking out in spikes. Because I couldn't even handle that. Alex shrugs, a slow rolling movement like a cat unfurling in the sun. It means nothing to me because it's already been handled. Lila nods, the words resonating with her. I heard his face was beaten in so bad they found teeth down his throat. A freshman pipes up, his eyes bright with drink. No, man, a buddy corrects him. He chewed off his own lips because he was left there to starve. Needed teeth for that. That's all bullshit, someone else says. It was a clean execution. Headshot. I feel Alex's hand tense in mine as they keep going, a demented Greek chorus rising up from the fires around us, echoing bits of urban legend that have grown and coalesced, spawning off each other in a town that has so little ugliness to celebrate that the story can't possibly be dark enough to penetrate the truth. None of those things are true, Alex says calmly, her words stopping the spray of myth around us. Everyone looks to her, myself included, our faces like little children around the campfire, ready for our story. He was drunk, she says slowly, incapacitated by a blow to the head. Her words, always careful, come even more cautiously than usual. I heard it was his own baseball bat, that he used it to prop the screen door, and whoever did it hit him upside the head with it. The freshman says, before his buddy smacks him into silence. That's possible, Alex acknowledges, and he smacks his friend back. They put him in one of his own kitchen chairs and bent him forward, chest resting on his own lap. There were a hammer and nails lying out because he was working on the porch railing. They wrapped his arms under his chair and drove nails through the palms, up through the seat, to hold him in place. Then what? Lila asks. Then he woke up, I imagine, Alex says, and the boys start laughing until Lila kicks at them from under her sleeping bag. I mean, what killed him then? She asks. You said he wasn't left to starve, and you don't die from being nailed into a chair, no matter how bad it hurts. Alex watches everyone carefully, and I squeeze her hand. You really want to know? She asks. Yes, everyone says in unison. Alex's story, the first sermon this place has heard in a long time. He was stabbed in the back with a screwdriver, puncturing one of his lungs. Holy shit, Park says. I heard there were two chairs, the freshman adds. Like someone sat across from him. They sat there and watched him die. That is actually true, Alex says. Fuck him anyway, Lila says. He deserved it. That's why nobody tried too hard to find out who killed him, the freshman says, eager to contribute. Everybody knew it was Comstock who killed that girl. They just couldn't prove it because the animals got to her and all the evidence was contaminated. He says contaminated very carefully, drunk tongue enunciating syllables, then plows on. My mom went to school with Comstock, said he was a nasty son of a bitch. She said he dated this one girl for a while, but she broke up with him real fast, said he got off on hurting her, you know? Mom wasn't surprised at all when they questioned him after that girl turned up dead. Had him up at the station for hours, asked him all kinds of stuff, but couldn't hold him because they didn't have any proof. Lila sits up in her sleeping bag and pounds her fist onto his foot. Would you shut up? What? He looks around, eyes wide, until his friend whispers into his ear, probably explaining that girl who turned up dead was Alex's sister. We don't have to talk about it anymore, Lila says to Alex. I don't mind, but there is something I have to take care of, if you'll excuse me, Alex says politely, and hurls her beer bottle against the far wall. Glass sprays in a shower above the heads of the tweakers, who look like they're finally leaving. They duck instinctively, and PK slides to the ground between them, hair spilling out in a fan around her as she hits the stone floor. Oh, hell no, Adams says as he stands up from the pew, dumping Branley off his lap. Alex beats him there, Park and me half a second behind, her sober strides cutting a straight path to where PK lies. What are you doing? She asks, each word heavy and cold. You throw a fucking bottle at me? The guy with the chain asks. What are you doing? Alex asks again, this time spacing each word out as if to give him the benefit of not understanding her the first time. Just having some fun, he says. You got a problem with it? People are up now, shadows thrown from fires reaching long as they gather to see what's going on. Sleeping bags unzip, and couples with messy hair emerge. Yes, Alex answers. Really, Adam? Just throw me on the ground? That's fine, that's awesome, Branley complains, forcing her way through the crowd until she sees PK. What the hell? She's just drunk, one of the other tweakers says, the lilt of panic in his voice giving away the lie. She asked us to take her home. Oh, yeah? Where's she live? Park asks. She's not drunk, Branley says, suddenly on her knees, cradling PK's head in her lap. She's totally out, dead weight. She holds one of PK's hands in the air, and it drops to the ground heavily. She was walking around a few minutes ago. Branley looks up at them, her face set in a fierceness I remember from the night she went ballistic on me. Branley is about to blow. You roofied her, she says. I'd like your mouth better with my dick in it, bitch, the blonde says, and I go for him, but Alex's arm is across my chest. No, Jack. She presses me back, pushing me a couple of inches behind her. She looks the guy up and down for a second. What is your name? What's it matter? It's Ray Parsons, somebody yells from the back. Ray Parsons, Alex repeats, and Park shoots me a questioning glance, like he doesn't know if we should take care of this shit now or let Alex do her thing. But she's shifting her weight, so subtly I doubt anyone else sees her moving. She's back on her heels, torso turned to the side, her hands, long unclenched from mine, open and palms up. Alex is ready to fight, and she looks like she knows what she's doing. I remember Park crumpled on the hallway floor in 2 seconds flat, and I shake my head at him. Right or wrong, I think she's got this. "Yeah, I'm Ray Parsons," the blonde says, "and you're a fucking..."